If everyone could please be seated. I will open this hearing for February 18th, 2017 of the Joint Ways and Means Committee. We were last night in Hermiston. Today we're in Madras. We're very happy to be here on behalf of the legislature. These many members of the Joint Ways and Means Committee here. And we're here to hear from you. Before we go to me discussing some of the guidelines for this testimony, I'm going to ask each member to introduce themselves very briefly and describe where they're from.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for being here. My name is Jennifer Williamson. I represent Northwest, Southwest, and Downtown Portland, and I am the Oregon House Majority Leader.
Hi, my name's Mike McLean. I'm from Central Oregon. Go Buffaloes. And... and Cowboys, but I represent Prineville area, but Crook County, clear down to Lakeview, over to Madras, around Crater Lake, up in Lapine. It's a big rural district, but it's great to be home.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for coming. John Huffman, State Rep for House District 59. We're in it. Thanks for coming.
Good morning. I'm Gene Wisnett, House District 53. I live in Sun River. I represent the great city of Redmond, about a third of the city of Bend, Sun River, Tumalo, parts of the county, and a beautiful building thanks to the taxpayers who voted to do this. This is a great facility for the great city of Madras, our neighbors.
Dan Rayfield, House District 16, Corvallis, Philomath, and Oregon State University.
I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative from Eugene, and I'm co-chair of this committee.
Good afternoon, and thank you. My name is Senator James Manning. I represent Senate District 7, which is Eugene and Junction City.
I'm State Senator Arnie Roblin, District 5. So I start in Coos Bay, then I go to Douglas County, then I go to Lane County, then I go to Lincoln County, then I come over to Polk and Yamhill County. So parts of seven counties, most of the coast.
My name is Bill Hansel. I'm the state senator of what's called District 29. I start at the Idaho border, the Hells Canyon area. I have Wallowa, Union, Umatilla, Moro, Sherman, Gillum, and half of Wasco County in the district.
Thanks for coming, everyone. My name's Chuck Thompson. I'm a pear grower from Hood River. That's part of my district of 26. It also includes around the mountain of Mount Hood, Clackamas counties, and into Multnomah counties. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Jackie Winter, State Senator of District 10. I represent most of Salem, Almsville, Turner, Monmouth, and Independence.
I'm Betsy Johnson. I'm a native of Redmond. I live in Scappoose now. I represent Senate District 16, North Tillamook County, Clatsop, Columbia, Multnomah in the Working Waterfront, and a little Washington.
I'm Senator Richard Devlin. I'm the Senate co-chair of Ways and Means. I'm from Lake Oswego, West Lynn, Tualatin, Lower Southwest Portland. Now, the guidelines this afternoon are going to be fairly simple. We will call three people up at a time. They will come to the table here. But while I'm calling those three up, we're going to do something a little bit different here because we normally have three chairs on deck, but we actually have six. So I'm going to call six people up on deck and then call three of them to come up each time when this table is cleared. When the people come up here, as soon as you sit down, whoever sits down first should start speaking. You will have 2 minutes each, and why we're trying to do this all is we have about 2 hours for this hearing. None of my talking now is going to count towards the 2 hours, but we have about 2 hours for this hearing. So we try to get through as many people as possible. The other thing we're going to do is we will not ask you any questions, nor will we answer any questions, because any time we tried to do that, we would take away from people's time to testify. So I will be calling the first three people up here pretty soon. If you have written testimony, whether or not you get an opportunity to testify or not, you can always bring that written testimony to staff. And if you would please stand up so they can see you. right there. She'll take your written testimony. Also, when you come up, because this is a little bit of a difficult arrangement, it is an amazing facility, but a little bit difficult of arrangement, you'll have to go to your right and go up over and then to go up to those stairs. Obviously, we don't want anyone trying to find a way to get up onto the stage from down here. It might be a little dangerous. So with that, we're gonna start. The first three people I'm gonna call up will be Barbara Fontaine, Tom, it looks like Ulysses wants to speak about veterans funding, and Len Parsons, if they would please come up. And then on deck will be Kate Cranish, Coral Robinson, Colin Robinson, and then also on deck will be Denise Pisa, Greg Ledbetter, and Mike Couch. Also, you will see behind me, there is a timer. When that timer gets to 2 minutes, there'll be a beep. And in order to ensure that we get to as many people as possible, I will actually stop you if you go beyond that beep. So let's go ahead and begin.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Thomas A. Weiss. I am the Jefferson County Veterans Service Officer, and I service the veterans, dependents, and survivors in this area. Thank you for coming to this area of the country to listen to us. I'm going to talk about what my job is as a county veterans service officer, not about money. There are two issues that are before you. One of them is the budget cut recommended by the governor of $10 million. The other is measure 96, which allows lottery funds to be used for veterans. Why do we need that $10 million back? Very simple. My day starts out interviewing a veteran. It could be a male, could be a female. It could be a young female, 22 years old, just got out of the service, who had a radical mastectomy. Very devastating to a young person. And then when I'm developing her case, I find out she was never diagnosed with any type of cancer. We had a doctor in the military that said, oh, she's a woman veteran, she doesn't deserve to have breasts. My next interview is a combat veteran whose buddy died in his arms, blown up, half of his body's gone. And he's clinging to the veteran saying, please help me, I don't want to die. Now, what's wrong with that scenario? The phone's ringing. Can you imagine trying to interview any of those people and the phone's ringing, you have to stop their interview so you can answer the phone? We can't afford to have receptionists. We need that money. Outreach. In Jefferson County here, our outreach, this is a rural county. Now, we're not like some of the 10 more eastern counties that you have very few veterans and lots of miles. We have quite a few veterans and not as many miles, but it's still a long way from here to Camp Sherman. It's a long way going down to Warm Springs and up in the mountains where our veterans are hiding. It's a long way going out to Deer Ridge interviewing our incarcerated veterans, which, yes, they still have rights. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Len Parsons, born and raised here in Madras, and I, too, would like to thank you all for coming over, taking time out of your busy schedule, I'm sure. Following up a little bit on what Tom has said here, he's done a commendable job here for the county, let me tell you. In 2015, over $1.3 billion, that's billion with a B, came into this state in veterans compensation and pensions to the veterans of Oregon. In addition, $145 million, which came in here for education, readjustment benefits, so on and so forth, not to mention over $1 billion in health care. These guys get it for us. If these guys weren't here, most of these veterans would never file a claim. Now, if you think about $1.3 billion a year, we're talking about a measly $10 million. I mean, to me, that's not measly, but in comparison, that's a pretty darn good investment to bring over $1 billion a year back into this state. I don't think you got another program out there that can do that. Now, granted, education's important. We need to do that. But the veterans in this, I mean, we just got to keep this this office funded. Right now, I think your budget's, what, $70,000 a year for two people in that office? When Tom retires and his assistant retires, we're going to have a heck of a time finding a replacement that's going to be willing to work a 40-hour week for that kind of money, a qualified person. These guys are well-experienced and well-qualified, Tom and his assistant. But anyway, I'm about out of time here, so I will leave the written testimony with the young lady down here, and we'll move on.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Barbara Fontaine. I'm here to urge the legislature to choose to invest in Oregon's future, especially services that benefit children, the vulnerable, and the quality of our environment, by asking corporations to pay their fair share. I moved to Oregon in 1974, a young woman, poor, broke, and on the edge. My goal was to finish college. I was lucky. I found a job, even though Oregon was in one of its cyclic recessions. Although the job in the agriculture sector paid less than the minimum wage, at that time, I was able to get by. That wouldn't be possible today. I gained residency, was accepted at OSU, finished my college education, and had a successful career. Without affordable tuition, grants, and work-study opportunities, that would not have been possible. It would not have been possible without access to community health services and food stamps. Today, retired, I have a comfortable life, and I have paid taxes in Oregon for 47 years. This was possible because Oregon invested in me when I needed it. I want the same opportunity for today's young Oregonians. The taxes I pay are not a burden, but a responsibility I happily take. Healthcare and a safety net for those who need it, education, roads, safety, parks, and the environment, these buy a healthy and prosperous society. I can't pick just one budget item. Oregon's future is its people, land, and resources.
Thank you very much. Now, the next three could come forward. And while those three come forward, if Neil Walker, Kurt Simons, and Jeff Rasmussen could come forward and be at the on deck, please begin. Also, I would ask that please people refrain from applause because it'll take time away from testimony. Please begin.
Hi, my name is Kate Kranjes, and I am speaking on behalf of the Bend Education Association and the 18,000 students in Bend Lapine Schools. I am a product of great public education. Our current funding crisis and drastic cuts in education are a direct result of the choices made by legislators in Oregon. We have chosen to put corporations above kids. I want to talk with you about something that you may not think of when we think of budget cuts affecting kids, and that is the insurmountable teacher workload that keeps coming our way. I go to school almost every Sunday and work between 3 to 6 hours in my classroom. Budget cuts have stripped our custodial staff, so instead of working on high-quality lessons for students after school, I am cleaning my classroom, vacuuming the floors, cleaning the sinks, making sure that our classroom is safe for kids. Due to the lack of federal funding leading to personnel cuts, I am cleaning breakfast messes and supervising playground duty instead of spending extra time with the students that need it most. Every time that you cut our budgets to give tax breaks to corporations, my workload increases, and it directly affects the time that I have to spend with kids in my classroom. I haven't yet reached my breaking point, but I know that it's coming. And it's a sad day when more teachers choose to leave the classroom because they feel that they cannot keep up with what we need to be doing. Now is the time to start taxing corporations. We cannot endure any more cuts to education at the expense of kids. You know this to be true. The choice is yours to make. It is time to raise corporate taxes and properly fund education.
Please, please.
Hi, my name is Cora Robinson, and I'm a sophomore in Mountain View High School in Bend. And while my school is not perfect, I've been blessed with some opportunities other students may not have. For example, my school gives AP class options so I can get ahead in college credits. My school is also involved with the foreign exchange program, giving students like myself the opportunity to travel and be involved with a different culture. But like I said, my school is not perfect, and with positives, there are also negatives. This year, for one of my electives, I took a web design class where the teacher repeatedly told us he had no idea what he was doing and that he had not been trained to teach web design. Or last year in my Lit and Comm class, I sat at a small table in the back of the classroom with three other students in a microwave because there weren't enough seats for everyone. And even though I have taken a French class for 2 years in a row now, the only thing I can say confidently is "Bonjour, je m'appelle Coral," because my French teacher doesn't have the professional development opportunities she needs to properly teach French. And these are only my personal experiences. I also asked some of my fellow classmates, and their biggest problems with our school is that because class size is so big and teachers have so many students on their hands, they feel overwhelmed with their subjects and are unable to learn and understand their topics, and there are not enough alternative ways for students to learn because they don't understand the learning method being presented to them. My peers are convinced that the Oregon education system is against them and is setting them up to fail, and it is. Graduation rates are about 75% and the second lowest in the nation. Oregon is ranked number 38 in performance and 39th for spending per students in the U.S. We have some of the highest class sizes and shortest school year, and with these odds, it's understandable that Oregon students feel they aren't being advocated for. But we can be if you fully fund education. If you fully fund every student and every teacher, if you fully fund all of us, give every child the opportunity to reach their full potential, because when it comes down to it, that's all we can really ask for. Fully fund our education so we can be given the opportunities we deserve. Thank you.
Please. Next.
Good afternoon. My name is Colin Robinson. I'm the proud father of two in the Ben Lapine School District, and I'm the president of the Oregon PTA. Today is my birthday, and there is nothing I would rather be doing than reminding this committee of your obligation to fully fund education. The obligation is clearly spelled out in a document I'm sure you are all very familiar with, the Oregon Constitution, specifically Article 8, Section 8, Part 1. The Legislative Assembly shall appropriate in each biennium a sum of money sufficient to ensure that the state's system of public education meets quality goals established by law, and publish a report that either demonstrates the appropriation is sufficient or identifies the reasons for the insufficiencies, its extent, and its impact on the ability of the state system of public education to meet those goals. I'll point out that as long as I've had kids in public education, the appropriation has never been sufficient. The extent of the insufficiencies, as reported by the Oregon's Quality Education Commission, is a funding gap of $1.9 billion to reach Oregon's goals for the K-12 system. The impact of this funding would lower class sizes by hiring more teachers, increase resources for both special and alternative education, allow more time for teacher collaboration and professional development. It would increase maintenance for school buildings, as just last month, a gym roof collapsed only hours before it is normally filled with students and staff. And because my daughter shouldn't lose another friend to suicide, we have to hire more school counselors in all schools so that every child has access to the critical mental health services they need and deserve. The reasons for the insufficiencies are clear. We have the lowest corporate taxes in the nation. It's time to make a choice. Put kids before corporations and fully fund public education and all the critical services represented here today. Thank you.
Thank you. Please, if we could refrain from clapping, the next group please come forward. And while they're coming forward, do we have these in page order? I'm going to still clap from the current order. On deck, I will have Judith Berger, John Wrinkle, and Dennis Guthrie.
Co-chairs Devlin, Nathanson, and members of the committee, welcome to Madras. My name is Denise Pisa, and I live in Madras and currently serve as a Madras City Councilor and as a board director for the Education Service District and the Kids Club Board. I come before you as a community leader and a mother to voice my support for funding for Cover All Kids, House Bill 2726 and Senate Bill 558. As an outreach coordinator for the Let's Talk Diversity Coalition, a big part of my job allows me to connect with families across this district and to understand the needs of my community. Perhaps one of the most important issues that gets brought to my attention on a regular basis is health care, and particularly children's health care. Parents in this district firmly believe that access to quality preventative and medical care is essential for their children's upbringing. Currently, nearly 17,600 kids, or roughly 2% of children in Oregon, are excluded from health care, from the Health Care for All Children in Oregon Act. This is a real concern for me. At the end of the day, we have children who every day are excluded from receiving care because of this, they are suffering. I am fortunate enough to have my children covered through the Oregon Health Plan, and this has been a huge relief for my family because I am able to get my children the preventative care and quick access to services that they need. My 12-year-old son is diagnosed with autism, and through the Oregon Health Plan has been able to receive speech therapy sessions, which have been very beneficial in allowing him to learn how to connect with his peers and advocate for himself when it's needed. Thanks to the OHP, all of my children are able to have regular checkups, and this takes a great deal of emotional and financial stress off my shoulders. I know there are thousands of mothers who count on the Oregon Health Plan. Thank you. Thank
you. Please go to the next.
Good afternoon. My name is Greg Ledbetter, and I live in Redmond, Oregon. I'm a retired state worker where I served as an investigator and consumer advocate for the Department of Consumer and Business Services from 1991 until I retired in 2007. I'm very lucky to be retired and living in Central Oregon with my beautiful wife, Fawn, now. Contrary to popular belief, us retired folk are not always off vacationing. We remain in our communities and remain active in our communities and are concerned about the difficulties facing our family members and friends, people who are working hard to make ends meet in this new economy. We help our kids as much as we can, helping to raise our granddaughter, as I am sure many of the people here do. That's why I come before you to speak. I speak for my granddaughter, who entered first grade in Florence, Oregon this fall, and who is having some emotional and developmental issues that require counseling services. Fortunately, my daughter and granddaughter presently receive the health care they need, but they, as well as thousands of others, will go without health care if the cuts to health care funding in the Oregon Health Plan are implemented. It seems criminal to me for the state of Oregon to be in a deficit hole of $1.8 billion for coming 2 years and not be ready to enact the kind of tax reform that's needed. As long as we choose to allow corporations in Oregon to pay the lowest taxes in the country, we will not be able to provide the services that families in Oregon need. Without significant new revenue, hundreds of thousands will lose their health care, and you will hear others describe class sizes getting larger and Oregon's low graduation rate getting even worse. Now more than ever is the time to ask big corporations to invest in Oregon. This is the year state lawmakers can decide whose side you're on, working families or corporations who are already paying the lowest taxes in the country. This is the year you can choose whether to kick hundreds of thousands off of health care or finally make corporations pay their fair share. Thank you.
Next, please.
Hello, I'm Mike Couch. And I do Prineville, Oregon, and I work with PSW. I have five clients I work with, and I work on whatever their goals are, and it's very important to help them get out there in the community and help out. You know, I got some that volunteer, some that just whatever their goals are. You know, I do. And if nobody gave you a chance, where would you be today? And that's what I try to do with these guys, give them a chance to succeed in life. And I see them, I've been doing it since 2002, and I've seen them change from not going out of the house to getting out and being part of our community that is absolutely needed. You know, they actually get to have a future in life. I don't know what else to say, but, you know, but I think it's very important for all of us to pay our fair share and take, you know, all the corporation to pay it. Thank you. I'm a little bit early, but
thank you.
You bet.
Thank you very much. The next group, please come forward. And while they're coming forward, if Amy Bird, Laura Cowan, and Chad Bullish, OSU Cascades, would come on deck. Please begin.
Good afternoon. My name is Neil Walker.
Thank you for having me, Co-Chair Senator Devlin and Co-Chair Representative Nathanson. I want to bring about an awareness of how important law enforcement is to helping gentlemen as myself with complex PTSD and behavioral health. It was February 10th of 2015, and my amygdala had hijacked me in Northwest Portland, and subsequently, Portland police were called onto the scene and had talked with me about my instability. And after their professional interaction, telling me to go home and get some sleep, I felt I was able to stabilize myself and come down to the Capitol building February 12th of 2015, 2 days later, and stay present to supporting Crispin F. with NAMI and another Chris with Folk Time. And because of my interaction with Portland police 2 days prior to February 12th, I was privileged to ride the elevator with Representative Alyssa Kinney Geyer, who has been supporting me throughout the years in my journey to be a social advocate. And again, I wanted to bring about an awareness of how important it is to support law enforcement, and their job is extremely stressful, and as well as their professional interactions with me and struggling with complex PTSD has been really vital in my stability and maturity. And with that said, I'd like to thank Chief Tanner for being present in the crowd. I feel safe. And also wanted to say thank you to Mrs. Manning for receiving me with grace and respect 2 weeks ago, and as well as Doug Riggs for being steadfast in accepting in my struggles as I'm attempting to be a strong behavioral health advocate. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you very much, co-chairs, senators, representatives. My name is Kurt Simmons. I'm the director of Jefferson County Community Corrections, and due to projected budget cuts, the new director of Jefferson County Community Juvenile Justice. I am here today to speak on behalf of OACCD, the Oregon Community Corrections Directors, and I wish to relay the success that Senate Bill 1145 created back in 1995, as evidenced statewide, in many ways through effective local programs, cost-effective interventions, and sanctions. The community correction system that has grown as a result of Senate Bill 1145 has two critical benefits for the state. First, our system improves public safety by lowering recidivism, which means fewer victims of crime in our communities. Second, we save taxpayers money both through improved public safety outcomes and cost avoidance. Oregon's community correction system reduces our use of more expensive prisons and jails, reserving prison for the most serious offenders while still keeping the community safe. And the governor's balanced budget does not provide the current service level that would be needed, and it would trigger opt-out, and I'm sure you guys all know the scary opt-out term. Today, I'm asking you to fully fund the community corrections because our public safety track record, and remind the committee that we are one of the few systems that you know, that we all know, will save the state money in the budget, in these budget-strained times. We also ask you to consider an unintended consequence and the costs associated with funding and reduction triggering the opt-out. It's expensive to do community supervision. You know that. It's money now will save us money in the future. I don't think any of us want an additional prison. We have budgeted 272. The governor's budget is 239. I think you guys know. Also, I'd like to thank the representatives and senators that I saw at the Justice Reinvestment Summit this week. I was there along with you guys, so you must have been on the road even longer than I have. I have 3 seconds to give to my boss.
Please.
Thank you, co-chairs. My name is Jeff Rasmussen. I'm the County Administrative Officer in Jefferson County. I'd like to recognize Chair Mae Houston's on the audience. Thank you for your help and assistance with our new courthouse. We came in about $1 million under budget, and we wouldn't have been able to do it without all of your help. I'd just like to take a moment in a short time and just tell you about, we're starting to see struggles being able to recruit the next generation of workers. Mainly it's because of the PERS. We aren't able to keep up our wages, at the same time affording a mandated Cadillac retirement plan. OPSERP is already $1 billion unfunded. I don't see that getting any better. The solution, I believe, is we need to move to a defined contribution plan. If you're going to mandate something that we have to do locally, it's portable and it's fair. There's already a tier 4 in place, which follows the same guidelines. It's under ORS 243-800. That's only for universities. We think that we should have that option to be able to opt out of for new future employees and go straight to the defined contribution plan. If we can recruit someone to come work for us for 4 years, that's their money. They don't have to wait 5 years to be vested. With that, I'll reserve my time for your next panel.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Now, while the next group is coming forward, I'm going to call up to be on deck Heidi Turner, Dakota Montgomery, and it looks like Tyler Swift. Please proceed.
Hi, my name is Judith Berger. I am with the I am the state judge advocate with the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Department of Oregon. I'm going to speak for the Department of Oregon in just a moment, but I wanted to touch on a personal thing and why this is so personal to me. And I will tell you, you heard from Tom Weiss earlier about the need for county veteran service officers, and I can tell you from experience, 10 years ago, I was housebound. I was literally frozen into my house because of my PTSD, and I am here today, able to sit in a room full of people that I don't know, able to jostle through the crowd earlier today to get signed up on this sheet because Tom Weiss met me at a county fair and said, hey, I hear you're a veteran. We need to talk. And we did. And my story is not a small one. It is most of the veterans out there. Oregon has a responsibility to fund veteran services through the general fund. House Bill 5039 proposes to cut funding to veterans by 80%, while the other departments are being cut by 4%. This is a huge disparity, and it's unacceptable. The Oregonians who have sacrificed the most to protect our freedoms shouldn't have to shoulder the additional and very inequitable burden to balance Oregon's budget. Measure 96 was written by Oregon legislators, advertised and understood by Oregon voters to be a supplement to the general fund financing of veteran services, not a substitute. When Measure 96 passed in October, 84% of Oregonians, a measurable, unheard of number, said that it was meant to be a supplement, and that is what we are asking you to do. Don't take that fund. Give us the additional funds to reach the veterans.
Please.
Good afternoon. My name is Dennis Guthrie. I'm past department commander of the VFW in Oregon and past surgeon general of the National VFW. I'm basically going to say the same thing as Judith did. Basically, last year, I'd like to thank all of you for voting unanimously to put the budget or the proposed measure in front of the voters. And as Judith just said, 84% of everyone who voted, and that includes all the people in Oregon, voted to have this as a supplement, not as a substitute. It was promoted as that, it was voted as that, and the people of Oregon understood it to be that. The governor's proposed budget, and I understand it is a proposed budget, cut 80% of the budget out of ODBA, knowing that they could backfill or substitute from Measure 96. This is not what the people voted on. Now, as it was said by Judith, the average department was cut 4%. And yet they cut 80% out of the veterans' budget. Now, to a veteran, it kind of sounds like they're trying to balance a budget on the back of veterans. Okay? Now, I know $10 million doesn't seem like a lot when you're talking about a $70 billion budget. But you got to remember, veterans have been getting less than 0.05% of the state budget for 70 years out of a $70 billion budget. And I'm going to thank you now for listening, and I've got some other things, but Thank you for your time, and thank you for being here, all right?
Thank you.
Hello, I'm John Wrinkle. I'm with the Veterans of Foreign Wars Department of Oregon, and I'm the state surgeon. I would like to cede my time over to Judith so she can finish our statement, if that's appropriate.
It would be better, actually, if she submitted it.
Where is this?
Right there.
Okay, well, I'll finish reading what she started then. We as VFW members with our families and friends voted for Measure 96, expecting that we would be receiving more funding for our veteran service officers. Now, when we talk service officers, we are talking about the VFW service officers in this statement, but we wholeheartedly support all veteran service officers in this state, the ones that are done by the states, the American Legion, DAV. So we're for all of them. So anyhow, money that Oregon in past years allocated to the VFW and other veteran service organizations, additional funding of VFW, American Legion, DAV, and other congressionally chartered organizations, veteran service officers support the need for nationally accredited representation to navigate the VA bureaucracy from non-governmental sources. Many veterans, particularly Vietnam veterans, have a lack of trust for federal, state, or county systems. Veteran service organizations, service officers are a much-needed resource for those veterans. The VFW service officers average more than double the number of claims, that's 480 a year, than the state and county VSOs, which is approximately 180. Our VSO has a consistent history of obtaining between $20 and $30 million a year in VA earned benefits for the veterans they serve. For this huge workload and incredible success rate, we compensate them nearly at half the pay of their state and county peers. It is a well-grounded, sensible, and fiscally responsible decision to fund the VFW and other organizations' veteran service officers.
Thank you. Will the next group come forward? And while they are coming forward, could Tanner Stanfill, Ken Hales, and Jand Kohler please come to the on deck? Please begin.
Good afternoon. My name is Amy Bird, and I currently teach kindergarten at Pine Ridge Elementary School. And it is with great gratitude and purpose that I stand here with you today. As a veteran teacher, I know with certainty that our graduation rate is a barometer of the health of our society and the skill level of our future workforce. 4 years ago, the New York Times published the story of Ollie Neal and his teacher, Mildred Grady. Neal was a troublemaker student who was caught shoplifting. His English teacher, Mrs. Grady, noticed that Neal stole books from the school library. She did not report him, but instead would drive 70 miles every Saturday to buy him interesting books that she knew he would like. Then she would leave the books on the library shelves for Neal to steal. Mrs. Grady's plan worked. Neal loved reading. He went on to college, he became a judge, and he had a happy, successful life. In my 23 years of teaching grades K through 12 in the Bend Lapine School District, I can tell you that stories like this one are not the exception. This committee has a choice. Ask Oregon corporations, the same corporations that have their roots in our public schools and development, to honor their tax responsibilities. Or continue to teach our children that unequal access to opportunity and resources is okay. That the third lowest graduation rate in the nation is okay with you. That having some of the highest class sizes in our nation is okay with you. I want to invite the committee to join educators like Mildred Grady and student advocates around the nation to act on your beliefs today. Together, we can touch both the head and the heart. We can show our children, like Ollie Neal, that they deserve to benefit from higher expectations and better access to the programs and services that families and students rely upon. Thank you.
Please proceed.
I started my career at OSU in 2006, 11 years ago. I can proudly say that I am the first person in my family to go to college. I can also proudly say that I'm the first person in my family that's had to drop out of college. Now, I don't know amongst us who has a home or who knows what it feels like to have a home, but shortly after leaving school, I became homeless for a time. It's not all bad, though, because even without a home, I still had love, the love of my three sisters and my dog. In fact, if it wasn't for my youngest sister, who's here today, getting ready to go to Bend High, I wouldn't have even considered moving back to Oregon. There were cons to moving back to Bend, though. But before I start down that path, reflect on these questions. What do you think when you think of Bend, Oregon? Do you think of skiing bachelor in the outdoors? Do you think of some of the world's best breweries? Maybe you think of year-round festivities and events. If this is what you think, you're probably in the majority. But for those of us here who aren't in the majority, we see the inequality. We see the privileged. We see our children struggling. We see a community that has been designed for the privileged and maintained by the privileged. That is why my sister needed me here in Bend. That's why I need OSU Cascades. OSU Cascades is the first major establishment in Bend, Oregon that can support the growth of minorities. That's why we need OSU Cascades to continue growing. OSU Cascades is the new heart of Bend, pumping diversity, acceptance, knowledge, and economic development back into what many consider the heart of Oregon. Through OSU Cascades' Human Development and Family Sciences program, I have literally learned what it means to be a family. OSU Cascades' research opportunities and programs have awakened my passions for research, human development, and technology. Through OSU Cascades' student development programs, I have learned what it means and takes to be a leader, and I'm extremely proud to call myself the president of the OSU Cascades Research Club. Because of OSU Cascades' focus on diversity and equality, I don't have to worry about not getting the same privileges as other students. Because of OSU Cascades, I can finally say something that has escaped my breath for my entire life. Oregon is my home. Bend is my home.
And OSU Cascades
is my home.
Thank you. Would you state your name for the record, Chad?
Oh, Chad Bolasan. Thank you.
Okay. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Laura Cowan, and I am a public school educator. I teach biology in a large, comprehensive high school. I'm here today to talk about the budget crisis Oregon faces. This budget crisis, in my opinion, is caused by Oregon's choice to have the lowest corporate tax rate in America. In 1975, corporations paid about 18.5% of Oregon's income, but today it's less than 7%. And believe you me, my students and I are feeling it in my classroom. I work in a building so old that the recent snowstorms damaged the ceiling so bad that buckets line the floor of my classroom. I had to squish tables together because the ceiling tiles were falling down on top of my students' heads. And squishing them together is not so easy because I teach 6 classes with an average of 40 students in each class. 25% of those students have special learning needs. And I try really hard to plan and differentiate for different levels. With so many kids and just me, I fear they don't always get the attention they need to be successful. Picture this, 40 kids, 16 years old, working with Bunsen burners and hydrochloric acid, stepping around buckets. Yes, this is my reality. And every day, I'm asked to do more with less, and I try to step up. I give my students Band-Aids, Kleenex, feminine supplies, pencils. I write grants to get labs to do, to get materials to do labs, but it's not enough, and it's just not fair. This is not sustainable for our students or the hardworking teachers. It's time for us to make the choice to ask corporations to pay their share and fund education, because I would remind you that saving the future of education in Oregon is saving Oregon.
Thank you. Please, will the next group come forward? And while they are coming forward, I will call up on deck Royce Eubanks, Julia Garcia, and Randy Garcia. Okay, I'm supposed to only have 3, but that's okay. Please begin.
Hi, my name is Heidi Turner. The gentleman behind me is my son. His name is Michael James McDaniel. I am from the town of Redmond. I am a caregiver. I provided for my son. That is my only job. He is a full-time job. I am here to encourage the state to continue to fully fund the Oregon Health Plan. My son, who is being treated for brain cancer, mind you, he's had 2 brain surgeries in the last 30 days. He has IV antibiotics on a daily basis that must be administered at the hospital, not at home. The hospital will not allow him to stay in the hospital because of the funding that is received. He must be out here. My son has an infection in his brain. excuse me. I suffer from an autoimmune disorder and a chronic illness which I depend on the Oregon Health Plan, and it covers all our survival needs. Because of companies like Comcast, who owe us over $145 million in back taxes, we are not paying their fair share. I worry about our lives, not having the Oregon. If the legislation makes the wrong choice in ending our coverage for approximately 350,000 Oregonians, that includes myself and my son, we cannot afford to pay for health insurance. I can't afford the premiums and the financial probative deductibles that occur with it. I urge all of you, the legislators of Oregon, to please consider what you are doing to make sure that corporations pay their fair share of taxes. We have the lowest corporate taxes in the nation. To appeal the Oregon Health Plan would kill my son. You have the ability to choose life. Please choose wisely.
Thank you. The next person.
My name is Dakota Montgomery. I am 19. I'm a resident of Redmond, Oregon, and I have been trans here for 2 years. I believe we can all agree without shelter, one does not have the ability or willpower to survive. My hope is for children and teens to have a safe and decent place to reside. There is a housing emergency, not enough housing in the 30% AMI range for all the youth and upcoming generations, and this is the sheet that I have for Redmond. There is no housing in the 30% range. The crisis is that it's becoming almost illegal to even be in poverty. Suicide's going up, drug use is going up, crime's going up in teenagers and youth. I don't want other youth to be treated poorly and be deemed unworthy, go hungry, or turn to drugs as a result of low self-esteem from a lack of a successful future. And I say these things to you guys today, I hope in consideration that we as a state and a whole community can come together and find a solution. As our representation for Oregon, I plea for your support will help future generations to come with affordable housing.
Please.
My name is Alexandra Sweet. This is my son, Tyler. My street name is Mama Bear. Tyler and I have lived inside of a car for over 5 years without a home. As a result of my experience, I am now advocating for the houseless people in Oregon through OregonHouseless.org as an advocacy group so we can have our voices heard. Young people like Dakota here, who I met today, I meet every day. They're hiding, they're on the streets. They have no place to go. They don't go to school very often. These are the ones who could use some school. Being houseless and poor puts one in jeopardy of criminalization. Single mothers are afraid of losing their children. They don't seek services. I believe we can all agree a sustainable housing solution should begin with affordable shelter in every city in Oregon. Solutions like affordable, sustainable housing villages for the houseless like they do in Texas. I also urge you to support House Bill 2215, again, House Bill 2215, to stop the criminalization of the poor and people who are lesser, or you feel who are lesser than you are. This is the right to rest bill where we would not get criminalized for not having housing. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Please come forward. If we could please refrain, please come forward. Now, this group that's coming forward should include Tanner Stanfield, Ken Hales, and Jan Coller. Who's not here?
Jan. You're Jan. No, I'm Ken.
You're Ken. And you're?
Tanner Stanfield, Chief Madras Police Department.
Okay, so Ken Hales. Is Ken Hales here? Ken Hales. And you're? Okay, so I've got Stanfield Coal. Okay, please proceed. We'll try to figure out.
I think we're missing the Jan. Anyways, Tanner Stanfield, Chief of Police, Madras Police Department. Thank you for being here today. I'm going to talk briefly in regards to, first of all, Oregon enacted a prepaid cell phone charge that was good and fair, but it's insufficient for the funding levels needed regarding rising costs for 911 services. The Oregon is at the state of Oregon 911 tax is at 75 cents per phone per month. This was set in 1995 and has never been adjusted. There has not been any inflationary adjustment in regards to this phone. We are the lowest in the United States of America. It is estimated using a common inflationary index, a new charge should be about $1.25 per month per phone. This will help our 911 centers and ease some of the burden on our local police departments, such as my own, which 911 services that we're putting in for our funding to pay for our 911 services, about 10% of our budget. I would like to thank all the veterans in this room. I'm the son of a veteran, and I'm glad that they're all here, and I will go ahead and pass my time.
Thank you. Please.
I am Ken Hales, Director of the Deschutes County Community Justice Department. Good morning, chairs and members of the committee. I wish to augment my colleague Kirk Simmons' comments with one simple observation. I recognize that the committee and the governor values the success we've had with justice reinvestment, and particularly with reducing prison over utilization. I need to illustrate that by underfunding community corrections, we undermine our effort to be successful in justice reinvestment. Justice reinvestment are services and activities on top of the base services and activities. By reducing what we get through the 1145 or the community corrections grant and aid, we undermine our ability to do the other things. Allow me to illustrate. I fund one parole and probation officer to supervise inmates on short-term transitional leave. She maintains a small caseload, is very successful to get these persons ready, assessed, case management set up, treatment set up, and then after they complete the short-term transitional leave, they go to a regular caseload. By underfunding community corrections, I don't have funding for the regular caseload. Instead of a caseload of 50, these individuals are going to a PO with a caseload of 80. Instead of having all the services that we now wrap around them, we don't have all those services. I already have a litany of cuts that I'm going to make if funding is not restored. I have just moments left. I want to thank the committee for this time, and I want to wish you good luck in your deliberations in the future.
Thank you. Now for the next group will come forward, and while they are coming forward on Jack, I will call up six people: John Nelson, Jory Messiner, Anthony looks like London Lidza OSA, Amy Pettijohn, Louise Muir, and Al Banish. Please begin.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. My name is Julia Garcia. I'm a member of the VFW Auxiliary in Redmond. I joined under my mother's deployment in Iraq, although I'm also eligible under my father's in Afghanistan, my aunt's in Korea, and multiple grandparents and great-grandparents. I know from personal experience the impact House Bill 5039 could have not just on veterans, but their families as well. When you decide how much funding to give to veterans, you decide how many families are going to get to eat, to get medical care, or to live under a roof. When the children of veterans can't receive these basic necessities, how can we expect them to do well in school, let alone in life? Without the ODVA, veteran service officers, both from counties and service organizations, can't help the ones who need it the most. My parents didn't have access to veteran service officers, and I had to watch them suffer needlessly because of it. As you consider this complicated issue, I urge you to remember that this is not just about money. It's about the health and welfare of entire families, veterans, their spouses, and their children.
Please proceed.
Hi, I'm Randy Garcia. I'm a junior at Redmond High School, and I'm planning on joining the military next year. This House bill that's planning on cutting 80% of veterans' funding is important to me, is because when I get home and after I'm retired from the military, I want to be sure that I'm taken care of, and that while I'm gone, I want to be sure that the veterans like my parents and my aunt will also be taken care of. And I don't have much else to say, but these veterans have protected our freedom, so why take away funding that they need?
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Thank you. My name is Roy Sendbanks. I'm the mayor of Madras, and thank you for coming here. Special thanks to John Huffman. I'd like to request your help with passing legislative measure to allow a pilot project for land use, LC-1640. The Madras Municipal Airport, wholly owned by the city of Madras, of approximately 2,190 acres, of that total, about 1,763 acres are currently located outside the Madras city limits and our urban growth boundary. The 1,763 acres are zoned airport management, which is a developable designation for economic use. Of this acreage, 609 acres are under use by Daimler Trucks of North America, Madras North Waste Treatment Plant, Madras Drag Strip, and the Madras Municipal Airport. Additionally, the city of Madras is in the process of completing a regional industrial large lot process, which will extend the UGB around 195 acres of the airport management area and 414 acres of the aeronautical use are within the 1,763 acres, leaving about 1,154 acres of city airport property remaining outside the city UGB and city limits to be. The benefits of this for Madras are streamlining the development process by requiring new development to permit the Madras Planning Department only versus city and county. Number two, the city comprehensive plan land use zoning and the airport master plan will be administered by one common agency on behalf of the airport.
Very much.
Thank you.
Please, if the next group will come forward. Please come forward. And then on deck will be Tom Gosver, Jared Reed, and William Condren. Please begin.
Whoever's first can just start.
Just start. Okay. Just begin.
I'm John Nelson. I've traveled this morning from the city of The Dalles, Oregon, where I now live, to testify here because I think it's important for our community. I'm a retired school teacher, having worked for Jefferson County Schools at Warm Springs Elementary School for 21 years. I retired in 2008. Among the many volunteer activities I participate in now, I'm elected school board director for North Wasco County Schools D21 and a member of the community outreach team. Today I represent my own personal views. The proposed $1.8 billion cut to the budget would affect our school district negatively. With our portion of Governor Brown's proposed budget of $8.02 billion, our school district would be able to get by on a bare bones budget. The co-chair has proposed $7.8 billion budget. That loss to us would mean a $1 million loss over 2 years to the school district. We would have to make serious cuts in personnel and programs over that period of time. We live on the edge, our school district, really, because the average age of our facilities is nearly 60 years old, and our oldest facility is 92 years old. So we're always jerry-rigging and spending a lot of money just maintaining our facilities so we can have school. And John Huffman is very aware of our needs. So thank you, John, for paying attention to that always. As a member of the community outreach team, I wear a different hat, And I've learned there that Governor Brown has proposed to make cuts to the DLCD, Department of Land Conservation and Development. What this means to Wasco County Planning Department is a cut of $50,000 in technical assistant grant funds. Sorry. So I'd like to see that restored. Thank you for your time.
Please proceed.
Hello, my name is Amy Pettijohn, and I am from Prineville, and I currently on the Oregon Health Plan. And I was so excited in 2014 when the ACA came into being, and that I was finally able to get health insurance for the first time in 4 years. Because bigger corporations are not paying their fair share, people like me are at risk of losing their health insurance. And while it doesn't seem like it's a huge deal, for me, it is. If OHP is cut, I would most likely not be able to afford health care. I have a pre-existing condition, and with the way the laws are structured, any problems that I have resulting from that would not be covered. I'm not the only member of my family that's on OHP, so that would be at least three of us that would lose our health insurance. Please choose to help people like me instead of allowing large corporations who are making a profit to not pay their fair share in taxes, and continue to fund the Oregon Health Plan.
Please proceed.
My name is Al Bench. I live in Prineville. I grew up in wartime in post-war Germany because I still have family in Europe. We traveled, my wife and I traveled to Europe quite frequently. Since we've been retired, we've been able to spend 2-3 months at a time over there. And I'm speaking to you about some very general philosophical differences that we have observed of life and lifestyles in Europe versus in the United States. We have lived over in our working years in several different states within the United States. I have also lived for 4 years in Canada. We're well acquainted with these areas, and we've noticed that the quality of life in Europe has steadily grown up from the 50s, 60s, 70s, while in America the lifestyles and the general quality of life for people have declined over the last 40 years. I've come to the conclusion that the difference is in one of philosophy, in one of the ways we approach life in America versus the way we approach life in Europe. In America, basically, we start with business and corporations. We worry about money. We worry about business and resources, and then we hope that somehow when all this comes together well, it works out for people as well. In Europe, the attitude is to converse. People start with the approach of worrying about people and then manage corporations, business, money, the like, expenditures to how they best serve people. That is one of the differences, and I think the reason why Europe has overtaken us. By any measure we have, they're getting ahead while we're falling behind. Thank you.
Please. The next group could come forward. And while they're coming forward, let's see, 12. On deck will be Fred Bieber, or BB, Larry McLean, and May Huston. Please proceed.
Dear the co-chairs of the Ways and Means and members of the committee, my name is Jory Mesner, and I am currently a student at Central Oregon Community College. I have been accepted to Portland State University and will be transferring there this coming fall. I am the oldest of four children, and my mom was a single mom until I was six, and she was recently diagnosed with cancer. My father attended the University of Oregon, but my mom never attended college. Currently, I am working two jobs while attending school full-time, which places large time constraints on my relationships with school and family. In my preparations for transferring to Portland State, I have a growing concern about the potential tuition increase that universities and community colleges could face because of the budget deficit. I want to be able to dedicate myself fully to school without having the pressure of work to distract me from my studies. With the proposed tuition increases, I do not think that I will be able to do that. Currently, I am eligible for the Oregon Opportunity Grant, but I have never received it. These are amongst the most personal reasons that the university ask of $765 million and the community college ask of $636 million will make a difference in my life. The same way that the ask of $155 million for the Oregon Opportunity Grant would allow for me to hopefully be one of the recipients, allowing myself to dedicate myself to the studies that I have always wanted to. I'm expected to be over $30,000 in debt at the end of this year, and it is clear that students are drowning in debt. You all have a choice and the power to raise revenue to ensure students like me stay in school or leave other students behind. We are counting on you to make the right choice, and we are depending on you to hold corporations accountable. Thank you so much for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Please, next.
Hello, co-chairs Nathanson and Devin and members of the Ways and Means Committee. My name is Anthony Lanuza. I am attending Central Oregon Community College with the hopes of transferring to OSU Cascades after I obtain my transfer degree. My family is simply not able to afford my education. I am very grateful for financial aid. I love going to school, and the quality of education I receive is adequately preparing me for a good future. Without a change, I feel the future of my education will be uncertain. My grandma has vowed to pay for some of my tuition, but how much is unclear. As a military brat, I can also receive a transfer GI Bill. However, my dad has already used some of it, so that much is also unclear also. As students, our schooling is threatened by rising tuition rates. The tuition rate is expected to raise by an astounding 10 to 15% next year from an already staggering 20,000 to 30,000 average for Oregon students. If the tuition gets too high, I simply will not have enough support to attend college. This problem appears to originate from a lack of revenue for the Oregon government. This needs to be fixed for a multitude of reasons. If the cost of education becomes too high, the already deep hole that the lower middle class and those in poverty are born into will get so deep that it will become almost impossible to escape. This will result in a loss of potential, a stagnation in the development of small business, and an even larger stagnation in the development of technology and the progress of our society. With the potential lack of funding, my own sister may not be able to receive the chance to go to college. Underrepresented communities will face poverty and an increased class gap. I feel that the solution of this problem would be taxing large multinational corporations in Oregon. You all have the choice to save students that are drowning in debt. Please support student budget ask of $765 million for university, $636 million for community colleges, and $155 million for the Oregon Opportunity Grant. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Please.
Hi, my name's Louise Muir. I'm here on the other age spectrum, the senior citizens. We have many people on the OPI plan, which is the Project Independence, to be able to stay in their homes. I understand you're talking about cutting that program. Through our senior center by itself, we supply over 900 meals this last 10 months to people who are in their homes, cannot get out, cannot prepare their own meals. If they're not able to continue on these programs, they're not going to be able to stay in their homes. If you could see your way clear to help us with some of this, we have meals, they consider meals on wheels. We do it anywhere from three times a week to seven meals, depending what that person needs. We also have the congregate meals, which we provide 3 days a week. This is a social life for a lot of these people who can't get out and do something. I manage the Madras Senior Center. I put in, I would say, an average of 20, 25 hours a week volunteering up there. I love it. I like the people, but we are being cut also by the Older Americans Act. So if you can see clear to not be cutting us and cutting these people who need it the most, who have paid their taxes in the past and continue to help support education and all these others, please do it. We would appreciate it. And hope that you will see clear to see that the seniors get what they deserve.
Thank you. The next group will come forward. And while they're coming forward, if I could call on deck Sarah looks like Zopes, OSA Cascades, Beverly Schlegel, and Stephanie Waritz. Please begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tim Gassner. I'm here on behalf of the Madras Indigent Defense Consortium. We provide defense to criminal defendants, adults and children in dependency proceedings, and youth in delinquency proceedings. I'm here today because I'm concerned about proposed cuts to indigent defense funding, a program with the state of Oregon that is notoriously underfunded, a program that has yet to recover from drastic cuts made in 2003. Cutting indigent defense funding any further would be very short-sighted. As attorneys who do indigent defense, we have a constitutional mandate to provide adequate defense and representation of adults, youth, in several different types of proceedings as described. We are also expected to provide holistic representation of these persons and help them address underlying causes which can be associated with criminal behavior, such as residential instability, substance abuse, and mental illness. We do not have enough funding or resources to recruit quality personnel or retain quality personnel to provide the constitutionally mandated defense, let alone address holistic representation, which has pervasive effects on the remainder of society, permeates notably areas such as public safety and education when the children that are the victims of neglect are not able to come to school and be ready to learn because of deficiencies in the home, when persons who are defendants in criminal cases remain disenfranchised and are not able to reform or control their behavior and are not getting the assistance that they need through the assistance of their court-appointed counsel. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, thank you very much for coming to Madras. My name is Jared Reed. I'm also a member of the Madras Indigent Defense Consortium. I have a local business here in town. I employ three people, one including a lawyer. I also would encourage this committee to not make any cuts to the defense consortium, or excuse me, the defense indigent defense fund that funds for disenfranchised people here in the state of Oregon. There is a direct correlation between crime and socioeconomic levels. As my colleague, Mr. Gassner, stated, we have a constitutional mandate, both federally and state, to provide adequate assistance of counsel to all of our clients. I was lucky enough to have a trial last week for a young lady that was just charged with a misdemeanor. However, she wanted to exercise her fundamental right. During that trial, she was able to be found not guilty and acquitted by a jury of her peers. However, in doing so, I ended up working on that case, and my hourly rate ended up being under $15 an hour. It is almost impossible for me to be able to recruit new lawyers to take on this sort of field when I have to explain to them that if they do their job correctly and efficiently, they're going to be making basically the same amount of money that in a few years a person that is in high school just working to support their own insurance or get car insurance will be able to make. Moreover, when they realize that, it's inevitable that they will also leave to be able to go make more monies in the private field. Ladies and gentlemen of this committee, I urge you to consider not cutting any funds to the indigenous defense. The judiciary and the state continues to get paid adequately, and only by reducing indigenous funds, it is detrimental to the system.
Thank you. Next.
Good afternoon. I'm William Condren. I'm from Prineville. I manage a group of attorneys called the 22nd Circuit Defenders. We provide court-appointed attorney services in Crook County and some in Jefferson County. I also sit on the LIPSC committee in Prineville. I'm not going to repeat what my two colleagues at the table have just said. I support it. I'm, however, asking you to make sure that treatment services, alcohol abuse, substance abuse, mental health treatment services, all of those services are fully and adequately funded. We have a mental health court and drug court in Jefferson County. We have a drug court in Crook County. There's a family drug court in Deschutes County. In Crook County, our drug court program works very closely with the probation department. All of our people in drug court have a probation officer. We found this to be a very effective way to reduce repeat offenders. We also found it to be a very effective way to reduce the need for a larger corrections budget, as in prison beds. So in addition to those treatment services being an effective way of reducing things, we also need to make sure that the local community corrections is properly funded so that we have enough officers to supervise these people to help keep them on track. And not only do these things reduce the need for prison bed, it also reduces the need for local law enforcement to respond to crime, and when they do respond to emergency situations, they're able to be more effective in their duties, which they take very seriously. So please consider making sure those services are properly funded.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, if the next group will come forward, the first group there, and then on deck will be Jose Sevilla, Jolene Pompelli, and Vernon Ribb. I cannot pronounce the last name, on home care worker program. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Larry McLean. I'm a lifelong Central Oregon resident and a veteran. I appreciate you being here today, and I recognize the enormity of the challenge that you face trying to bring together a budget that is far apart. I would ask that if budget cuts are to be made, you would treat veterans equitably rather than what appears to be occurring. And I would urge you to respect the letter and intent of Measure 96. Throughout history, veterans in this state and this nation have always stepped forward and answered the call. All I'm asking that is that you treat veterans equitably in your budget considerations. Thank you.
Thank you. Please.
Good afternoon and welcome to Madras. It's nice to see the Ways and Means Committee out and about like this. I know one of your jobs is to propose a balanced state budget, as required, I guess, by Oregon Constitution. And what I'd like to encourage you folks to do is to balance the budget by reducing taxes, reducing state agency budgets appropriately, and hopefully you can make intelligent decisions on how to do that. We are already in the top one-third of taxed states in the nation, according to demographics that I got online, and so I don't think we need any new taxes. And if you can't decide on which agencies to reduce, then do a across-the-board reduction. This was done. I worked for the state for about 12 years, 13 years, and this was a long time ago, but they one time had a budget shortfall of about 25% over the proposed budget. They ended up doing a across-the-board cut, and that across-the-board cut was supposed to be 25%, turned out to be about 15%. And when we met, the state agencies all went to a meeting or meetings, and the person leading the meeting, I remember, started out by saying, "Look around you. One out of every four of you is going to be unemployed if these tax measures do not pass." Well, as it turned out, through attrition, through unfunded positions that state agencies carried, very few people were actually laid off. And life went on. We didn't notice much difference at that time, and probably neither did the taxpayers of the state of Oregon. So I encourage you to make the appropriate cuts, not increase taxes. Thank you.
Mr. Beebe, would you state your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Fred Beebe. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. My name is Mae Houston. I'm one of the three Jefferson County commissioners. I welcome you all to Jefferson County and to Madras, and thank you, Representative Huffman, for being instrumental in getting you to this location. You have an enormous task ahead of you. Nobody in the audience can probably identify with the challenges you're facing in balancing your budget. Thank you for coming to hear what the rural Oregonians have to say and concerns of each department that affects someone here locally, with their services, with their income, with their medical care, with education. I thank you for hearing testimony today. You've heard from our county administrative officer with the concern of PERS. And yes, we need something to be done. It is a challenge for us to hire new employees who are willing to come here and work at the wages that we are able to pay. So thank you for that. And you've heard from quite a number of our veterans. It is a primary concern to me that our veterans service office budget not be cut. We'd like that to receive attention. You've heard from Louise Muir at the Senior Center. The seniors have serious issues. I'm glad she could make them presented to you today. There are so many issues. I won't speak on more, but I just thank you for coming and listening to rural Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Next group would come forward. And would John Breezy, Alan Unger, and Matt Wiederholt come forward. Please proceed.
Hello, co-chairs Nathanson and Devin of the Ways and Means Committee. My name is Sarah Zobris, and I am a student of OSU Cascades. A member of ASCC programs coordinator, a non-traditional student as I did not start my college experience until I was 26, a first-generational student, meaning I'm the first one on my mom's side of the family to try and complete a bachelor's degree in Oregon. As the struggles of school has not been as simple as some, I already, as a senior, have over $50,000 in college debt with that looming over my head with the looks of grad school in the future. My dreams of grad school may not actually be obtainable if the increases of 10 to 15% on tuition is actually funded. As a student, I am drowning in debt. Right now, my husband is the only one who's able to financially support us, and because of that, my student loans do not help out at all. We barely have enough to make it by. If we were to increase tuition, my dreams might not actually be something that I can do. You have the choice of creating new revenue by increasing corporate tax reform for higher education, and with that, that would help immensely. I thank you all for your time today, and I look forward to seeing our future be brighter.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the Ways and Means Committee. My name's Beverly Vasquez. I live in Redmond, and I'm an OSU Cascade student. It's taken me 8 years since beginning college to complete my undergraduate education. This spring, I'll earn my degree, and this summer, I will begin a graduate program to earn my master's degree in teaching. I want to share a bit of that journey today. As a high school student, when I received acceptance letters from colleges, including to the Clark's Honors College at the University of Oregon, I felt elated that I had been chosen. But my elation had to face reality. I was a first-generation college student, and my family was middle class, which left me in a bind. I didn't qualify for Pell Grants or work study, and my family didn't have the money to help me pay for my education. The cost of attending Honors College at that time was about $30,000 a year. So instead, I began community college. Despite my best efforts, I had to take out loans by my sophomore year. I worked 25 hours a week. I took 15 or more credits each term. I volunteered 5 hours a week, and I played a season of college soccer on scholarship. I eventually earned my Associate's of Arts transfer degree just under $10,000 of debt. Now, $33,000 is the amount of debt I will graduate with this year, near the national average of approximately $37,000 of debt. We students are drowning in debt. Oregon ranks 46th in the nation for funding per student, well below the national average. Students like me have struggled to piece together the funding to go to college, and an increase in tuition would put a degree that much further out of reach of thousands of Oregon students. You have a choice to address the budget deficit in higher education, and students might, like me, look to you to generate this revenue so that we can afford to earn our degrees and begin our professional lives. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, please.
Good afternoon, members of the Ways and Means Committee. My name is Stephanie Wartz, and I'm here to advocate for public education and my students. I'm a middle school teacher, middle school social studies teacher here in Bend. More cuts to public education will lead to even shorter school years, larger classrooms, fewer teachers, fewer educational assistants, and less enrichment activities. Enrichment activities are all of those things that we all remember in school as being the really cool things that we gravitated towards. But they take time and they cost money, and we need supplies to be able to do them. All of these things hurt our students' ability to compete with students from other states where education is adequately funded, and lead to decreased opportunity for our kids. Our current model of funding is not working, and it is perpetuating the financial squeeze on lower and middle income families in our state. We need large and out-of-state corporations to start paying their fair share. Our veterans and schools should not have to be here competing with one another to receive adequate funding. I know that corporations argue that they will raise prices. However, since the election in November, Bend Broadband raised the cost of my internet from $39.99 a month to $53.99 a month. State Farm also recently increased the cost of my auto insurance. My car is 15 years old. The cost of my auto insurance should be going down, not up, at this stage. Our public schools, veterans, and pretty much everyone here deserves better. It's time for corporations to pay their share. Thank you for your time.
Okay, the next group will come forward. And do you have 3-4? On deck will be Carol Packard, Tammy Pike, and Calvin McNary. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Chairs Devlin, Nathan, and members of the committee. My name is Jose Sevilla, and I have lived here in Madras with my two children, and I'm here to support of Cover of All Kids, House Bill number 2726 and Senate Bill 558. As a parent, my responsibilities are to help my kids when they're ill, to treat them, to comfort them, and to let them know everything will be okay. And to my understanding, there are currently 7,600 children in our state that do not have access to health care coverage. How is a parent supposed to tell their children they're going to be okay, that it will go away soon? They're only able to do so and look into the children's eye when they're eligible for a great comprehensive health care system. This year, the legislature will have the opportunity to extend the care for 100% of the children in our state. No kid will be left behind. Prevention is the key to ensure that our children do not have sick days or miss out on learning because they're at home ill. I urge you to choose and create revenue so that we can ensure all children in the state are ready to learn and live ill-free. Our state is the last in corporate tax, and our state is missing out the ability and the opportunity to invest in our families and the future of all Oregonians. I urge you to value something we all believe in, and that is that no child should be left behind, and to have a great health coverage. I urge you to prioritize SB 558 and HB 2726 as a funding priority.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, members of the committee, my name is Jolene Pompelli, and I am a Planned Parenthood volunteer. I'm here today because I want you to know that I stand with Planned Parenthood, and because Planned Parenthood stands with me and over 70,000 Oregon patients every year. It's more important now than ever that Oregon not only maintain access to reproductive health services, but that we expand access to reproductive health services. I'm asking you to support Bill House Bill 2232, the Reproductive Health Equity Act. As a patient, as a parent, as a community member, reproductive health is important to me. I understand the challenges that the state faces. I understand that you must make tough decisions in this budget. However, I don't believe you should consider making cuts to essential programs that Oregonians rely on, like healthcare, education, public safety, or our veterans, while we continue to have the lowest corporate taxes in the nation. You must choose your priority. We can have the lowest corporate taxes, or we can fund critical programs. I urge you to put Oregon families ahead of the profits of out-of-state businesses. Thank you for this opportunity for me to talk, and thank you for your time and for your service.
Next, please.
Hello. My name is Rip Raywinkle, and I'm here to advocate for the funding for the Home Care Workers Program. I take care of my ex-wife. She's had three strokes, and she can't take care of herself anymore. She has no memory and forgets to do everything. I have to clean, cook, do her laundry, lots of it, because she has other problems too. My home care worker benefits have been cut from 88 hours to 80 hours, but I put in as many as 90 to 100 hours taking care of her because I made a commitment to take care of her a long time ago. I'm trying to do that the best I can. I've been in Oregon since I was 4 years old. I've been started working in Oregon when I was 12 years old in the fields, picking berries and doing other things that I could in the summertime to pay for my school clothes because my folks were poor. I paid my share of taxes in. It's time for everybody to pay their fair share of taxes, including the big corporations, which aren't paying their fair share. So the serious services that we need in for our people are not going to be cut. We must find ways to invest in our state. If funding is cut out for Oregonians like Linda, she would have to go to a care facility where her care would be less of a quality than what I can give her. She has a cat that helps her a lot and keeps her mind off of things, and I mean, she's in her own home. If her funding is cut, my funding is cut, then she would have to go to a facility that would be a lot less productive than somebody in her own home. When making choices for funding, I urge you to think about family care needs. Thank you.
Thank you. Please, the next group will come forward. And I'm going to call a human services group. Okay. The next group on deck will be Stephanie Weidler, Rick Trelevon, and Jenny Jenny App. Please proceed.
I'm John Brees. We're a family ranchers in Crook County out of Prineville. We've been ranching in place for the last 100 years. It's our hope to pass on our ranch to the next generation intact and healthy. Our budget concern is the OSU statewide public service programs, specifically adding back the $9.4 million in continuing service level. And this is in Senate Bill 805, and needs your support. Natural resources are the economic engine of the East Side. Senate Bill 805 will keep from reversing the past 15-year decline and hold steady the 2015-17 biennium budget. It is the support we really need, and it doesn't add any new programs. In our part of the world, we are confronted with endangered species, plants, fish, frogs, birds, and multiple furry critters. And we have a virtually new Endangered Species of the Month coming out. As a land-grant university, OSU experiment stations, forest labs, and extension are the most trusted and reliable sources of research and bringing solutions, the bridge which maintains the East Side economic engine. They get us the latest and best information and so we can manage the land and provide food and fiber for the people of Oregon. We are continuing to work for what is best. When we think of what is good for the bird is good for the herd, that isn't something that comes out of thin air. It comes from research. It comes from a lot of our expertise, but it comes from knowing the good science. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Devlin and Nathanson and committee. My name is Alan Unger, former mayor of Redmond, like Senator Johnson's dad, Sam, and former Deschutes County Commissioner like Senator Hansel. I would like to address the water resource budget. Thank you for your strong support since the 2013 budget. That support has allowed us to start a place-based Deschutes Basin study with the goal of protecting agriculture cities while putting more water in the Deschutes and Crooked River. Continued support is critical. Please consider the following policy option packages from the governor's proposed budget in your budget plan. POP 104, one place-based planning and grants coordinator, POP 109, matching grants to assess feasibility of developing water, POP 110, helped recapitalize the water supply development account, POP 101, resources to conduct basin studies, POP 105, to add 3 assistant regional water masters and 1 Northwest regional hydrotech, and POP 107, to provide assistance to Umatilla County for their issues. Water issues take a long time to develop solutions. Please continue your support. The Oregon spotted frog listing has created urgency for us and threatened agriculture in Jefferson County. With your help, we can solve that. Thank you.
Matt Wiederholt, I'm with the City of Prineville Railway, and today I'm representing Old Rural Oregon rail users and the Connect Oregon funding and your support for the continued of the Connect Oregon Fund. The best way to describe what the fund can do is to quickly tell you our history at the City of Prineville Railway. See, over a decade ago, we were just barely pulling 100 carloads, and we were down to one customer. We were losing about $450,000 a year from a reserve fund. This reserve fund we had built from when we had 7 sawmills and pulling lumber cars from the sawmills, and of course, they no longer exist. With only 18 months of operating on this reserve fund, we were lucky enough to receive Connect Oregon 1, and we started a transload facility called the Prineville Freight Depot Project. And the intent of this transload was to find the little shipper, the single one or two carload a year guys, and give them a place to load their rail cars. Well, since then, we've received Connect Oregon 1, 2, and 3 for a complete build-out of 2 yards, one in Prineville and one at Prineville Junction, 2 miles north of Redmond in Deschutes County. So what this means is because of the Connect Oregon money and the Connect Oregon facilities, we went from 1 customer to 43 customers utilizing Connect Oregon facilities. Of those 43 customers, 3 of them were going to look out of state, and we now have them in Oregon and in our community. Of those 3 out-of-state businesses, they have 80 full-time employees. The City of Prineville Railway can now say that we have over 100 direct jobs on our rail line thanks to the Connect Oregon funding. Now, these jobs wouldn't exist if we would have never received that, and abandonment was chosen 10 years ago. We could do over 1,000 carloads a year this year, and we haven't been able to do that since 2001 when the last sawmill closed its doors. So look at Connect Oregon funding as a way to increase your revenue, not as an easy line item to cut. Thank you.
Thank you. The next group will come forward. We have a new group to call. Next on deck will be Virginia Graham, Carol Leone, and Judy Watts.
Former representative Stigler.
Good afternoon. Thank you, members of the committee, for being here. My name is Dan McNary, and I'm an agricultural science and technology instructor at Crook County High School, just down the road in Prineville. In 2009, the Crook County School District cut all elective programs at our high school. Through fantastic support for the ag program in the community, the district reinstated my position by the end of that summer. While happy to be gainfully employed, I was expected to teach large numbers of students in added courses that I had limited experience prior to, with no budget to do so. Over the course of the next 6 years, I pieced together a program that worked for our students using limited funds. While I was able to purchase some equipment with federal Perkins dollars, much of the equipment was outdated and in need of repair in my shop. At the same time, our district was able to reinstate other career and technical education programs by successfully applying for a revitalization grant and working with other entities within our community to fund others. Still, there was no significant budget increase to maintain and replace outdated equipment in my facility. Students were learning, but they were learning with obsolete equipment. That was until the introduction of the Secondary Career Pathway Fund in the current biennium. Over the last two school years, my program has received $17,000 through this grant program. These funds have allowed us to make significant improvements to our welding facility at CCHS, allowing students to work with safe, industry-recognized equipment in high school and giving them a better opportunity to leave high school career-ready. With general education dollars being held at a maintenance level or lower statewide, the opportunity for growth of programs will not be realized by many districts within the state in the next biennium. The Secondary Career Pathway Fund allowed many programs across the state to grow and provided students with opportunities that they would not have had otherwise. Please look to what has been successful as you work on the current budget situation. This line item in the budget should be funded so program growth can continue and students can achieve career readiness. Thank you.
Before you start, we're one short on this panel. Could Mike McIntosh come up for this panel, and then please proceed.
Good afternoon, and thank you for being here in our beautiful Central Oregon. My name is Carol Packard, and I've been teaching for 28 years in both metro and rural Oregon schools, and I am currently a sixth grade teacher in Sisters. And besides teaching, I have been fundraising for outdoor school for 25 years. I am the chief petitioner for the Measure 99 and work to pass tirelessly with the team to pass outdoor school in 34 counties. I'm here to ask you to fully fund outdoor school. How many of you have ever attended outdoor school, have a relative that has? Many of us, yes. Oregon was the first state in the country to initiate outdoor school, by the way. Outdoor school exists all over the world as well. I understand that we have a tough budget issues, and I want to share reasons why outdoor school deserves full funding. In Sisters, high school valedictorians mention outdoor school in their graduation speeches as a positive key stepping stone in their K-12 experience. Many high school students also, because they were in outdoor school, also become high school counselors because of they want to have a positive impact on younger students. Outdoor school increases academic performances, it builds important life skills, it provides a kind of hands-on learning experience that students don't get in the classroom, and it exposes students to life sciences and provides a break from video games, which we're seeing at an increasing alarming rate.
Thank you. Please.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and committee. My name is Mike McIntosh. I currently serve as the superintendent of Redmond School District. Lots of exciting things happening in Redmond School District, but today I need to talk to you about one of my most difficult parts of my job, and that is balancing a budget in the face of revenues that do not grow at the same pace with expenditures, thus forcing decisions regarding which of the programs, people, or priorities that have to be cut to balance that budget. The very same programs and the people and the priorities that we credit for the success of our students. At the K-12 budget amount proposed by the co-chairs in the budget framework, Redmond School District will need to shave $2.8 million from our current service level. We need $8.4 billion to be put into the budget to make that work for us. How will we do that? It's heartbreaking to understand that the negative impact on the budget reduction and the shortfall on this generation of public school students is not their fault. It must become our priority to sustain programs and the growth of our students. To cut $2.8 million, we'll cut teachers, we'll cut days, we'll cut a number of things or a combination thereof. We'll be forced to stop doing the one-to-one initiative potentially that puts technology in the hands of every student. Our job is to make success possible for every child. The nagging question remains is why does the overall percentage of our state budget that is allocated to K-12 continue to go down? Not so long ago, that percentage was approaching 45% of the state budget. We've been well below 40 for quite some time and hovering around the 38% mark. I don't understand that. I don't understand why the K-12 funding declining is, and it is clearly inadequate to fund at the keep pace with the expectation and providing quality workforce that is college and career ready. I believe that we can and will and have to work together to force our legislature and our state to come up with a way to fund education successful in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Next group will come forward. And while the next group's coming forward, if Dr. Bud Beamer would come forward to be on deck, Mindy Mendenhall and Jake Pickering, please proceed.
Good afternoon, Representatives Devlin and Nathanson and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today, and nobody's talked about my thing yet, so I'm very excited. I live in Redmond with my husband and my two sons. My older son is 11, and he experiences developmental disability. And I would like to speak today about the importance of the family-to-family networks and the continued levels of funding for developmental disability services. The task of family-to-family networks is to create connections between families and their communities, and to create those natural supports so that families become less reliant on service systems, which is really useful. When you receive a diagnosis, you're given a host of medical professionals or educational professionals who will tell you what the disability is, what it looks like, but what they can't address is what does life look like, because life doesn't stop. You don't stop being a member of your community. You just have an extra label. And so family networks are instrumental in connecting families with each other, which is something that, because of privacy laws and caseloads, other organizations and entities just can't do. Keeping funding for developmental disability services at current levels, when we need something, I can contact my son's service coordinator and she can get back to me within a day or two. It used to take weeks. And when you have a problem, you often can't wait for weeks. So keeping levels where they are would maintain where we are. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And state your name for the record.
Stephanie Widler.
Thank you. Please. Hello. Thank you, chairs, co-chairs, and my representatives from Central Oregon. Thank you very much. And Senator Winters, my name is Rick Trelevin. I'm from Best Care Treatment Services, and I'm the Community Mental Health Director in Jefferson County. So alcohol and drug treatment providers play a critical role in healthcare services in the state. We have been working with our local CCO, and we've been able to show that in less than a year we create savings for the global healthcare budget because of our interventions in drug and alcohol treatment. This isn't just a claim, this is these local, we've worked with our actuarials to actually show this. So we save money for the healthcare system, we treat the people who usually have nowhere else to go. And our clients are, if allowed to degrade further, will be a drain on the healthcare delivery system and the criminal justice system. They don't go away. Drug and alcohol providers have been in the forefront of integrating services into healthcare.
We are working here in Jefferson County with the local FQHC, Mosaic Medical, where we have close integrated services so that we're able to bring their patients right into our services as they're screened and identified. We have a very innovative Native American outreach program that has been very helpful for decreasing the impact on downtown. And we have an incredible outreach to pregnant women who are still using drugs that is, just creates amazing miracles and huge cost savings down the stream. So continue to fund Oregon Health's plan for this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hello, co-chairs and committee members. My name is Jenna App. I'm the executive director at CASA of Central Oregon. I'm joined here today by several CASAs who actively have cases and a board member. If you could stand up, that would be great. Thank you for your time. CASA stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates. And what we do is recruit, support, and train advocates who work with children who have been placed in the foster care system, usually due to abuse and or neglect. Please do not decrease the funding to CASA statewide, and please consider supporting HB 2171 to increase CASA funding. The benefits of having a CASA are really significant. Children who have CASAs are less likely to suffer abuse, are more likely to find a permanent home, and spend less time in foster care, and do better in school. Right now, we only get about 18% of our budget through state funding, despite the fact that we are statutorily mandated to be appointed to every child in foster care. The savings is really significant in terms of the transition out of the foster care system. If CASAs were fully funded across the state, that would cost about $15 million. However, it would translate into a savings of almost $300 million because each of the 11,000 children across the state would spend, on average, 8 months less time in care. CASAs are better for the children in terms of long-term outcomes, and it's actually better for the state in terms of a budgetary savings. So please support CASA programs and do not support any cuts to the funding this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Next group, please come forward. And please begin as soon as you get here.
I'm Virginia Graham. I live in Bend, Oregon, and I'm glad to do so. Been there since 1997, and for 17 years, I lived in an apartment that was part of a house that then was sold a year and a half ago. I'm fortunate to have my family here, and I want to stay in Bend. I have not only my daughter and her husband, but I have my grandchild who is now 34, and he has a wife and three children, so I'm a great-grandma. And all of this is something that's very important to me to be close to and be part of. And yet, what much to my surprise and chagrin, I had to go on list for affordable housing, and I was lucky to get on the list. If I tried to get on a list now, I would have a year wait on any of the facilities that are around in the Bend area. And when I was told that I could try for Redmond and Prineville, that seemed to make no sense to me at all because I want to be near my children. And I am a senior, I'm a productive senior, and I work with the library as a volunteer, and I do a reading program as a volunteer. And the earlier years I was here, I was in the substitute teacher system and helped with Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council classes, and I'm proud of the things that I can contribute to the community. I need help with rent assistance for affordable or subsidized rental in Central Oregon. We're in a state of crisis in Bend, and I think that needs to be addressed more aggressively and vigorously. There are a lot of people like me that are productive seniors who would love to stay in Bend.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Ways and Means Committee members, for being with us here in Madras today. My name is Judy Watts. I am from Bend, and I am the Outreach Administrator for Cascades East Transit. We are the largest transit provider in the state without dedicated funding. We are responsible for moving Central Oregonians around the region for work, school, medical appointments, and more. Without dedicated funding, we rely on a patchwork of funding, including investments from the state. An example that I would like to share with you today is from the state budget. Last year, we were able to receive funding from the Central Oregon Regional Solutions Committee and Connect Oregon 6 funds to build a transit hub for the region in Redmond. This will provide access from Madras, Prineville, Redmond, Bend, and Sisters into Redmond and across the region. It is a very important and critical transportation project for Central Oregon. Investments in public transit reduce household transportation expenses, reduce traffic congestion, reduce obesity, and increase public health, allow seniors to stay longer in their homes, and expand job opportunities. I'd like you to continue to invest in programs like Connect Oregon and Regional Solutions because they prioritize and invest in multimodal transportation projects for Central Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here, members of the committee, to a rural area, and we much appreciate that. I'm Carol Leone. I'm on the board of directors of the Arts and Cultures Alliance of Central Oregon, which is a voluntary group of arts organizations that have come together to promote the arts and to help sustain the arts. And recognition of the arts is important economically as well as to our spirits. I'm also the executive director of the museum at Warm Springs, and I know through experience and being there for nearly 15 years, how much the arts means to those students at that new school out in Warm Springs. And the arts are something that helps students to express their concerns, to express their creativity. The arts help develop discipline, learning a musical instrument, learning how to use a paintbrush and paint what you want, to write your poetry from your heart. Those things are extremely important in the growth and development of children and for adults as well. And I just want to encourage you to not make deep cuts in state programs such as the Oregon Arts Commission. Right now we have an exhibit up at the museum at Warm Springs that is our annual tribal youth art exhibit funded by an Arts Build community grant from the state, from the Oregon Arts Commission. And if you could see what those children have done, it's amazing with both traditional arts and also with wonderful things about our eclipse that's coming to Oregon. Central Oregon, August 21st. So anyway, I urge you to continue to fund the Oregon Arts Commission and other arts organizations. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Now on deck, if the next group would come forward, and then Elizabeth Nunn, Ray Mayow on AARP, wants to speak. And Christine Pearson. Again, that was Elizabeth Nunn, Ray to speak about AARP, and Christine Pearson. Please begin.
My name is Bud Beamer. I've been a physician in Jefferson County for 45 years. County health officer, currently working for the Department of Corrections in Pendleton. I'm also, more importantly, been a member of the Mountain Star Relief Nursery, which cares for infants and toddlers I see John Hoffman here was extremely instrumental in getting this started, and Senator Winters, we've certainly appreciated your advocacy for our organization. I've lived by two statements that have become a mantra for me. One's a Gaelic proverb that says, it's difficult to correct in the oak the crook that formed in the sapling. And Thoreau's statement that for the thousands beating on the leaves of dysfunction and behavior, we only have a few dealing with the roots. And in dealing with infants and toddlers, it's extremely important during this period of brain development. I brought a chart here, which John, I think, is familiar with. It discusses the mismatch between opportunity and investment. This line here is the ability of the brain to change, and it goes down after 3 years, where 95% of the brain is developed, down to almost baseline at age 20, when most of our agencies and money is spent. This line here represents the amount of money that's spent to change the brain. So we have this mismatch of all the money when the brain is difficult to change versus not having the monies up front where we can make a difference. It's important, I'll let the audience maybe review that. What's important about it is that this is where we're going to make the change and who these kids become. And not only that, but we know, is that me?
That's you.
That can't be me.
Thank you very much.
Is it really? Okay. Well, support, we appreciate your support and continue.
I'll just pick up where you left off. So my name is Mindy Mendenhall, and I'm a public school teacher. I've been teaching in Oregon for 9 years. I want to say thank you so much for coming to hear us. Just sitting there through this whole thing, I see that your job is not easy, and I do not envy you it. But I do appreciate the time that you're taking to hear us out. So thank you. I'd love for you guys just to look around for a minute. We're in a beautiful performing arts center. And you guys have these cool little pins, I saw some of you, and glasses and shoes and fashion. And we have these great audiovisual people over here. And I just want to ask, who's going to perform in this Performing Arts Center? Who's going to record for you when we have meetings in the future? The arts are usually the first to be cut with cuts. And I've been an art teacher who has to be endorsed in multiple fields in order to continue to teach. And my first job was in Mapleton, and it was a part-time art job. And my budget was $16 per student for the year. And if you know anything about art supplies, that's enough for one large piece of watercolor paper. And when I came to Summit High School in Bend, I was hired for the coolest job ever, graphic design and photography. And the classes are packed. All of our art classes are packed. Kids want these classes. They're so excited. And there are not enough supplies for them. And I was told when I started, how much money do I have to buy cameras? They said, oh, you don't have a budget. So I had to raise money. I had to get my family and my friends through Donors Choose to pay for my cameras. Our booster club paid for our cameras. Grants paid for our cameras. And that's not sustainable. And I think we value the arts. We consume the arts. It is huge. Everything is digital now. It's so important. And yet we will not invest in the arts. At some point, there has to be a choice to invest. And I believe that corporations should pay their fair share.
Thank you. Please. Hi, my name is Jake Pickering, and I am here on behalf of the Oregon FFA. I am a senior at Redmond High School, and I am currently the chapter president for the Redmond FFA chapter. And I just come to help get your guys' support on House Bill 2382, as for it would help the funding of the Oregon FFA and one of the probably most prevalent youth programs there is. As for the Oregon FFA, stands for Future Farmers of America, and this is a nationwide program, and our concentration is agriculture, but we do a lot of things in terms of leadership, public speaking, and parliamentary procedure. And besides that point, just in the state of Oregon alone, from 2015 to 16, the the number one economic driver for the past 2 years has been agriculture. And in 2015, agriculture set an all-time high of $5.7 billion of agricultural income to our state. So with this being said, agriculture is depleting, and in the past 10 years, it's depleted by about 7%. So with this big of an income coming into the state of Oregon, with a total of 1,800 farmers, and that's over the entire state of Oregon, that have a large corporation, 1,100 of them have been family-oriented, and they have been have their farm for over 100 years. Well, that only leaves about 700 farms that have been instated in the past 100 years or so. And so with this youth program, it gets our youth into farming and helping our country grow, because by 2100, our worldwide population will be 11.7 billion people. And with America feeding two-thirds of the world, that poses a very prominent problem. So I thank you guys for coming, and yeah.
Thank you very much. Now, will the next group come forward? While they're coming forward, since only two people responded, could Alan Smythe join this group if he is still in the audience? And the final group we are going to hear from will be Amy Oland, Artisha Wilkinson, and Dylan Sherman. Please proceed.
Hi, I'm Christine Pearson. I'm a primary care physician and the chief medical officer for Mosaic Medical. Mosaic is a community health center here in Central Oregon that serves the Tri-County area. Thank you for coming today and listening to us. I appreciate you being here. So I'm here to urge you to protect our Oregon Health Plan funding. We currently serve about 19,000 patients in our communities, have 12 access points across Bend, Redmond, Prineville, and Madras, in our primary care clinic with integrated health services. We serve 60% of our patients are on Medicaid or OHP, and we have about 50 providers who help to serve those patients. As you know, community health centers are nonprofit, locally controlled organizations that provide high-quality integrated care in rural and other underserved communities. Across the state, the community health centers serve over 400,000 patients, including 1 in 4 patients on the Oregon Health Plan. OHP coverage helps us make our patients healthier and have a better quality of life. When Oregon expanded OHP in 2014, it meant that our health center was able to add services, new clinics, and expand our services to better serve the patients. We need to invest in primary care to help people become healthier. I just quickly want to share a story. We have a 27-year-old patient recently sought care with us after gaining OHP in 2014. He had been incarcerated and had severe anxiety symptoms. He was in recovery from methamphetamine and sober for 2.5 years. He had a significant background of trauma, and after establishing with us, was able to be properly diagnosed with PTSD and treated for this, both with behavioral health interventions from our behavioral health consultants and medications. These would not have been possible without Medicaid.
Please proceed.
My name is Elizabeth Nunn. I live in Bend, or as I call it, Pleasantville. I am here because somebody asked me to come and speak today. So I did a little research last night, and I think I have some things to say. First, I pay some significant property taxes in Bend. So what I want from you is I want you to fund the most successful programs for breaking the cycle of poverty in Oregon. Primo. Now I want to tell you something about myself. For 40 years, I was a social worker. Focus was domestic violence, suicide prevention, and child abuse. I know of what I speak. My last position was managing about 12 foster homes. each child that came into my care came in through poverty. And as I sit here and listen to everything that people have said about Oregon, I'm going to tell you what we say in Texas. It's about time y'all get some courage and kick some corporate butt.
Thank you both. Thank you. Now, if the last group will please come forward, and will please come forward. Also, could Victoria Hansen please join us, since only two people came forward? Please proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Amy Olin. I'm one of 350 volunteers for the SMART program, or Start Making a Reader Today. I volunteer as a site coordinator for Mid-Columbia Children's Council Head Start program here in Madras, where another volunteer and myself read to one of 20 pre-K students. We also make sure that each of the children in the program take home a book twice a month, totaling 14 books for each child throughout the course of the year. But more importantly, we offer a mentorship that helps these children get excited about reading and create a drive within those children to learn, which is especially important in an area like Jefferson County. According to the U.S. Census, Jefferson County has one of the higher levels of poverty-stricken families and food insecure households in Oregon. In fact, several programs have suggested our poverty rate is between 20 to 23%. That is approximately 800 children in this county alone that are going hungry. And this can create many disadvantages in many aspects of their life, which includes difficulties in school. From poor social development to increased likelihood that they will repeat a grade or even drop out. The SMART program gives these students an edge that they may not otherwise have. Providing one-on-one reading and access to books helps toward closing the educational gap that is created by poverty. And several students have shown that shared book reading and availability to a book is key in the development of children's literacy and also play a role in giving greater chance that a child will go to college. More importantly, volunteers provide a sense of stability in this child's chaotic world. The children that I work with come from impoverished homes, foster care, migrant workers, but for more importantly, most of them, their lives have been turned upside down. But they know that every week I will be there. I will be there to read to them, to listen to them, and this simple act creates an excitement within them to learn, to read, and they want to pass this excitement on to their fellow siblings. That is why I'm here on behalf of SMART today. Darn it.
Thank you very much. Please.
Hello, my name is Artesha Wilkinson. I am a resident here in Madras, Oregon. My journey to college could be viewed as unique to some, but very normal to others. I'm a junior at OSU Cascades working on my degree in human development and family studies. I am what is considered an underserved student who faces the challenges of living in a rural area. I'm a first-generation college student, Pell Grant eligible, and a recipient of a prestigious Oregon scholarship. Prior to my attendance at OSU Cascades, I attended Central Oregon Community College full-time, worked full-time, and maintained a 3.5 GPA while upholding my family. Through determination and the providential aid of the Ford Family Foundation, I was able to decrease my employment hours to focus on my continuing education as a recipient of the Ford Family Opportunity Scholarship. I was required to find a university where I could attain a bachelor's and eventually master's towards teaching. My concern was how I would be able to do this and continue residing in Central Oregon. Central Oregon is an area of growth that is continuing to expand each year, providing families like mine the promise of an economically stable future. As a single mother of my daughter and three younger siblings, I found it imperative to maintain the consistency of where we lived for the children in my care, so much so that I was wondering how I could achieve my goal of becoming a teacher while maintaining the children's day-to-day lives. The OSU Cascades campus has made it possible for my family and I to stay in our home and still achieve our dreams. My hope is that someday my daughter and siblings will also be able to attend OSU Cascades. The expansion of OSU Cascades could potentially ensure the space needed for my children and their peers in Central Oregon to continue their education in the area they have grown up in. As OSU campus is only four-year college within 3 hours, the advantageous outcomes of this expansion will promote individual lives and economical growth in this community.
Thank you.
My name is Victoria Hansen. I live in Tumalo. I went to ABCEF. And
you're fine.
Have my own house. Thank you for helping me with giving gold with DD money. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our hearing for this afternoon. On behalf of your legislature and on behalf of the Joint Ways and Means Committee, we appreciate you all coming out. We're sorry we could not hear from everyone. You can still email us at waysandmeans.budget@oregonlegislature.gov to send us any material. And obviously, if you Google Oregon Legislature, you can find a way to send material to us. But we appreciate you all coming out for this evening, and thank you very much.